Welcome to episode 40, 4-0 of Mac and Cheese.
Woohoo! If we were doing this every once a year, we'd be aging rapidly. But no, it's been fun, it's been exciting, and what's on the topic list here, Mac, for our 40th?
Well, our new format's rocking, so let's keep with it. We're going to do four topics today. First one's been in the news a little bit. It's this urban beach, or sand park, as David Staples called it the other day, in Louise McKinney Park. Then we're going to talk about Fort Edmonton Park, which is another big potential renovation project. I did a video recently in a blog post about the World Cup, the Women's World Cup coming to Edmonton, and I've been watching with disappointment as England has been their usual selves at the Men's World Cup in Brazil. And then we'll finish off with innovation infrastructure.
Yeah, this urban beach. You know, I'm kind of, yeah, I always like to play this little imaginary game. I'm a counselor. Yep. This has come forward. Which way do I go on it, right? The penny-pinching Mike Nickel side of me says, it's just yet another nickel and dime request. You know, at City Hall, we think every million is being another nickel. And we've got so much on the go now. Surely it is time, just like the sobering realization on Blatchford Field, that you can't have everything all the time. On the other hand, I'm thinking, it's kind of cute. It might actually get some action happening in a part of town that has always been disturbingly not very exciting, despite all the amenities that have been put in. Would it help to sort of, what's the polite word, to drive out the bums?
Gentrify.
Gentrify. Nice word, nice word. This is right next to the convention center down in the River Valley, right? In the McKinney Park, which is still, I think, the only people that know about it are the ones that go to they used to go to the Dragon Boat Festival and a few other things. It's still sort of the most secret location in town. I don't know if it's worth spending $1.5 million on something like this.
Yeah, so that's what the city wants to do is add some sand, basically, to this park. So it wouldn't be waterfront or anything like that because that's against the rules.
It's a waiting pool for adults.
It'd just be sand. It'd be like a big sand pit and going to cost $1.4 million. I have two concerns about this. One, I don't know why we're talking about it now when they say the earliest we would be able to do anything is 2019 because of the Valley Line LRT. Like, why don't we bring it back and talk about it then?
Well, like, these things take time. Maybe this
takes long to put sand in a park.
Hey, if I'm a city administrator, I know how long it takes things to get going. Yeah. You know, if I can get it locked in, that's the main object is see if you can't get it locked in so they can't take it out later on.
Fair enough. My second concern is, is sand really going to make the difference? Is that why people don't use Louise McKinney Park, because there's no sand there? I don't think that's the reason.
You know, now that I think about it, when you mentioned the 7-year lag time, by the time 7 years rolls around, maybe sand wading pools will be totally out of fashion and something else will be all the rage for sort of riverside amenities. I think, okay, I'm the counselor and I'm picking about all this and I'm thinking 7 years, nah. Let's go back and revisit this in 3 or 4 years once we start to see signs of the LRT. Why is it being tied in so closely to the new LRT line down the southeast?
It's just because the line goes through there, right? So the construction will impact, the construction of the LRT line will impact whatever they do in Louise McKinney, I think is the reason.
So like you'll be able to look down and see all the nice sunbathing people and wave at them as you go by?
Maybe. Oh.
Cute.
It could be okay. I think a restaurant or something like that is what would tip the scales in terms of getting people down there. I mean, access is a thing. Not everybody wants to walk down the stairs. But you could drive to Louise McKinney and park in that parking lot, but there's nothing to go to at the moment. And I don't think a sand pit is going to be enough of a draw.
And you're right. There's, you know, in business they call it opportunity costs, right? If you weren't going to spend that $1.5 million, what else could you spend it on down there that might make a more effective or more pressing argument for drawing people in? Why do you have to sell a park once you built it? Isn't a park kind of like just people want to be in parks?
Well, especially in the River Valley. Like, it's already there. I mean,
the thing is kind of shaping up to be a bit of a white elephant, you know?
It's kind of weird. I mean, it's only $1.5 million, like you said.
No, but they've already put about millions and millions into that park.
Into Louise McKinney, you mean?
Yeah, and there's not many people go there. Compared to Hawerlick Park on a Saturday afternoon where you can't move.
Right.
Hmm.
I saw on Twitter, too, somebody said, what will you do with the view? Your view from this sand park will essentially be the riverboat and the other side of the river. That's what you get.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of true. It's like, well, I don't know. It's probably more interesting places I could spend my time.
So we'll stick the sand pit up on top of the Chateau Lacombe on the roof.
Now there you have a good view. Yeah. Okay. Rooftop patio.
So I think if we were running the world, we'd nix this one for at least 4 years.
We'd nix that one, yeah.
And we might go back at it and look and say, guys, let's crack it open and think about other alternatives. Because in 3 years' time, there's going to be a whole raft of new proposals.
So right. And I'm not opposed to doing something in the River Valley. I think we should, but maybe not right now.
Okay. Fort Edmonton Park upgrades.
Yeah. So this was the other big ticket item that came to council. What was that, $150
million? $150 million.
Yeah.
Whew.
I saw on Twitter that you couldn't even replace a toilet without spending the $150 million, which makes no sense.
No, without the first part is the $50 million that they need for simple upgrades to what's down there.
Okay.
And it is a fact of life that when they first started building the thing, they had very rudimentary infrastructure down in the valley, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And it's completely a stretching point. It's now 60 years old. It needs to all be replaced, especially if you want to keep going with the fairly dramatic expansion. This one I find interesting because there is return on the investment. You know, if they do this Aboriginal thing right, and it gets carried off, this is a $50 million thing. They want to do a sort of it's all got the right words and everything else because you don't want to offend anybody, but it's not going to be like an Indian village. It's going to be about the Aboriginal experience. And
yep.
Done right, it could be a world-class tourist attraction. It could be one of those missing pieces in this town. We keep thinking about how do we create some sort of tourism. Done right.
Yep.
It could be just great. And if it was done right, and if it was bringing in 10,000-20,000 German and French tourists who were coming here specifically because they love all things Native and Aboriginal, and they got to come and see this thing as part of a Western Canadian tour of Aboriginal things, then it might even earn its keep, plus be a very attractive thing for us. So I got to think about that, and the other $50 million is for upgrades. Well, in their favor, Fort Edmonton Park has come so far so fast.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 10 years, they've done all kinds of upgrades. They've transformed their governing structure to raise money privately as well. I mean, you got to hand it to them, but that's an awfully big ticket item. And once again, we're sitting there saying, can we be spending $1 million on an urban beach when we've already got Blatchford? It's going to cost a whole pile. We've already got the arena. We've already got transit. Do we once again say, guys, cool it, or do we say, as the chair of the foundation down there, the great visionary Doug Goss says, look, folks, we're in Alberta in 2014. There's more opportunity, there's more money around here than we're probably going to see in the next 100 years. We should move now, get these things locked in. If not now, when?
Yep. Yeah, now's a good time. We're growing, but it adds up, right?
$150 million.
Yeah, it totally adds up. I mean, the Aboriginal angle is really interesting, especially given what's going on right now with the Royal Alberta Museum and the debacle around consultation with Treaty 6 nations there. Like, you know, Edmonton could really embrace that part of its history and its future and like you say, be, you know, a really unique place in the world where we have this fantastic asset. But for me, again, a problem is access. The $150 million, I'm guessing, does not include an LRT ride out to the park. And I highly doubt it includes the, you know, improved bus service out to the park. If you're a tourist, you're coming to the city of Edmonton, you want to get there without having to rent a car. And right now, it's damn near impossible to get there.
Access
is a big problem.
Don't forget, there's all kinds of major tourist attractions around the great cities of the world that are hard to get to. And I'm thinking even the Toronto Zoo is way the heck up.
You can't even walk there. You can't even walk there.
But the Toronto Zoo is way the hell up in the north end of Toronto. I don't know how close it is to LRT or whatever. But, hey, don't we have the South Campus / Fort Edmonton Park LRT stop?
Well, this is my point exactly. You can't walk there. You get off the train at Fort Edmonton Station, and then it's like
No. Come on. I think you're being picky, because if this thing does automatically, there is a bus service now when the park is open. If demand picks up, surely you'd have to think that there would be a bus every 15 minutes that we'd become a shuttle service from the LRT down. So I'm not going to worry too much about that concern.
I don't think I'm being picky. I think I'm trying to uphold what you said, which is if done right.
Yeah.
And to me, access is a huge part of being done right. Like, you can't just have a great asset if nobody can get there.
If you have a shuttle service like you have for Heritage Days,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That changes the situation significantly. Not that hard to do. Yeah, well, is that in the $150 million?
Everything's in the 150 million until it turns into 175 million.
Yeah, yeah. And prices go up. I mean, I love Fort Edmonton Park. I think it's a great attraction. I enjoy going there. But
your counselor,
sound like
you're going to vote
money.
For it, Mackey, or not?
Right now, no. But I would have done, I think, what the council decided to do ultimately, which is they said, we're going to go ask the province and the feds for money.
Mac Nichols. I like it.
Councillor Nichols, quite progressive now. He's turned a new leaf, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. You wanted to talk about FIFA World Cup and the women's tournaments coming to Edmonton. And I know you're in mourning because your beloved England, we've been watching the World Cup, and once again, they've acquitted themselves with valor. Are they absolutely out at this point?
Oh, it's very sad. I think so. They've lost twice now, so they're as good as gone. At least it wasn't Spain, defending world champions, dropping their first two games.
Listen, we have to
out,
face the facts. You and I have English extra. English are probably the world's worst sports people. It's just a fact. What I don't think, is there any sport that England is a world leader in?
Cricket.
No, the Indians beat them long ago at that game.
Yeah, I don't know. It's disappointing. So anyway, there's the big game down in Brazil.
We English, we're the brains. We're not the brawn.
I'm not the brawn. Big game down in Brazil, but there's women's soccer coming to Edmonton, which
yeah.
I think is pretty cool.
Pretty exciting.
You can watch the World Cup on TV, but under 20s or this year in Edmonton, you can go in person, and then next year is the big Women's World Cup, which Canada is hosting. So it's in four cities across the country, and Edmonton is one of the host cities, which I think is pretty cool.
Do you think that if you're one stop on a world tour, can you create the excitement and the energy? Can you create any kind of a World Cup atmosphere if it's just one or two games here?
I think they're going to try. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the cool things they've done so far, and it's a year away from the big Women's World Cup, is they've got the countdown clock in City Hall, just like they have in all the cities, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a neat thing. Apparently, you know, in other countries, it's really popular. People line up to get their photo taken with the clock or whatever, kind of like the Olympic clock.
So there'll
see,
be a
right?
little bit of hype built into
so
it.
So there's some hype
fun.
Building, and then hopefully they can build in some activities around the games, right?
Well, do you remember, I think you were around, Mac, when the under 20 tournament was here, and you know the incredible emergence
yeah.
of the women's team here. Boy, that was exciting. The whole town was abuzz. And going to that final game, there was not a spare seat in Commonwealth Stadium, which
right.
is, what, 60,000 seats. And
yep.
everybody had their colors on, and it was Canada. I'm getting, like, chills up my back speaking about it. And that 15-year-old girl wonder and Sinclair. And then they lost, and it was so sweet. They were so sad. But
but you got really excited, right? Oh. People got totally into it.
Oh, it was a Cinderella run, and wouldn't it be great if that happened again? The trouble is if your team doesn't make it, it kind of takes the air out of the sails pretty fast.
Yeah, for sure. And that game you're talking about, the record attendance, that was set yeah. here in Edmonton. It still stands. 12 yeah. years later, it's still the attendance record for
that was a
women.
Really neat love affair between that team and the city. And it took everybody by surprise. That was part of the great fun of it, you know?
Yeah.
So
I'm
if that happened again,
it.
That'd be great.
I think it'd be really fun. So, yeah, I'm going to go check out the games this summer. They're pretty affordable, actually, for the under 20s. And then next year...
What are they charging?
They're about $10 to $30 per game for the under 20s. And then next year for the women's, you
yeah.
can buy, like, a pass for all the games here for, like, $200 to $400, depending on where you're sitting and stuff. So
it
could be fun.
Hmm. Is our local soccer team, Edmonton FC, going to have any kind of role?
They weren't at the announcement and stuff, so I'm not sure. I mean, they've been pushing on their own social media and stuff. Like, they do this cool thing where their coaches give predictions on the World Cup. So I imagine they'll do that kind of fun stuff. I don't know if yeah. they're involved in an official capacity. FIFA seems like they're pretty tight on the reins, right?
Yeah. Do you follow FC Edmonton?
Somewhat, yeah.
Go to games?
I haven't been to one in a little while, but I would love to go again this year. You know what? They have a great food truck at their games.
Okay. Last thing we're going to talk about, slightly dry but quite interesting, is the innovation infrastructure.
Okay.
And that basically refers to your whole, in any given province or city or whatever, you have a system of helping businesses with commercial high-tech ideas to go from being an idea from the research lab at the university or from some welder's workshop, to help them learn about business, to get in there, to get the financing, to incorporate, to turn out 4 or 5 years down the line to be a flourishing little company with 20 employees paying $1 million in taxes and, you know, generating $10 million a year in sales. It's called economic development, right?
So it's an ecosystem of service providers and investors and people that can help you.
And it's almost a side story to watching Dave Hancock at work. You know, here's our sort of, well, I guess he's an interim premier, but Hancock's A, a very smart cookie, B, a real, he loves policy. He likes to see things. He loves processes and all lines and things to check off and whatnot. And this is almost the ideal job for this guy because he's a good leader, but he's not a charisma guy. That's why he's never won the leadership. But what he's doing is taking a whole pile of things that got completely stalled or went off the rails with all the political machinations that went on almost since the beginning of Stelmach, who was opposed by the Calgary guys. And it's like a huge breath of fresh air at the legislation. He's down there and he's getting all kinds of things tidied up so that when the new guy comes in, they're going to have more or less of a clean slate. Part of this has been, there's been an ongoing problem that, as he said, our innovation system, it's pretty good. We're doing a lot of stuff, but it's fragmented. There's a lack of leadership. The Alberta Innovate structure was about 4 years ago. They set up four companies that were all going to be like the invention assist people. It was health.
With like the worst names ever, like Alberta Innovates Technology Futures.
Yeah, health systems.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is they didn't put an overriding structure. They set up four different companies, four different boards.
But no leadership.
Well, there's no one person that says, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. So Hancock has basically said, okay, enough of that. And but the way he went about it was so just smart. A political veteran who's been around and knows how to... He gets other people to think it's their idea. You know, he starts consultations. He brings in everyone for a summit. And he just sits back and he's primed the pump enough. You know, then they give him the social license, right? So he's about to unveil a whole sort of pile of things which will get this whole thing straightened around. And I hate to say it, but this kind of stuff really does count. When you look at Germany and how it evolved its industries, when you look at China and their growth of their infrastructure, when you look at Silicon Valley, all those took really good, well-thought-out background government policies. And you don't really start to hit home runs until you get that stuff figured out.
And you think the work that he's doing is going to make that change for
us? You know, I think Hancock in his own little way is going to leave quite a good legacy for these 6 months that he's in office.
Sounds like we should have him as the premier instead of these other guys.
Well, but he himself knows that he's a policy wonk, and he doesn't quite have the royal jelly.
Yeah. So in this innovation ecosystem, is there challenges between like the cities, like Edmonton versus Calgary? Has he been able to navigate that kind of stuff?
Not really. It's more just having a whole system that is actually directed from one person will say, yeah, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. There's some concern that it might be too much top-down, that you know, invention and technology is of itself chaotic and comes out of the weirdest places. And so as long as this system can adapt to people's ideas, like not get too structured, so sorry, you don't fit somewhere. But there are gaps now, and they're also taking a good hard look at financing. Like, you know, it's always a very, very difficult area because how do you know if a potential technology company is worth taking the risk on?
Yep.
But they do want to have some system where there's a little more money or incentives, probably tax incentives again or whatever.
Yeah, well, but I mean, Alberta does far less than some other provinces like BC currently, right? So there's room for them to add some new programs for entrepreneurs.
And we're doing pretty good at this stuff, but it could really rock if it got straightened around.
And we have Premier Hancock to thank for it.
If it all comes together as he's planning.
Cool.
And he's just done it so nice and orderly and put the right consultations in and hasn't shot off his mouth. And at the end, he looks back and he's got exactly what he wants and everyone thinks it's their idea.
They're all happy, yeah.
Smart cookie.
Do we have some announcements to look forward to then, or what's on the horizon here?
Yeah, next couple months. He's got to move fairly quickly. He's already talked about it. It's called the Innovation Council.
Okay.
And it'll be a mix of industry and organizations and government people, but it will be charged with setting up a new system that works and with the government's wholehearted backing, so it will happen.
Yeah, and an evolution of the current system, sounds like.
Yeah, he's tweaking and renovating. He's not destroying.
Yeah, cool.
So,
well, nice to hear that for a change.
And it's not going to cost $150 million, probably will by the time it's done.
And more impact than sand.
How do they manage to? How do these governments manage to spend so much money like my well, actually, I did have to go and pay $15,000 in taxes the other day. So I guess that's where it's coming from.
Got to pay your taxes. Yeah, it's the end of June. If you haven't paid your taxes, you better do that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, that's episode 40. No cheese this week.
I was in such a hurry to get here that this mouse had no time to pick up any cheese. My apologies, gentlemen.
We will make up for it doubly in episode 41.
That's true. We'll have a feast.
It'll be great. Thanks for listening. Check us out at macandcheese.ca.
I'm Graham Hicks.
And MacMail.
Until the next time.